Elizabeth Chapel, a lifelong entrepreneur who finally found my niche. After years of new ideas and jumping from business to business, I figured out how to turn a craft into a successful career. In 2016, I started a monthly subscription box for quilters. That little startup has grown into a thriving, multiple six-figure business that I am so proud of. As a published author, designer of fabrics and patterns being sold throughout the world, my favorite thing to do is to teach others how to grow a career of their dreams. Each week, you'll hear from me or from other guests who are creative entrepreneurs, so you can learn exactly what to do and what not to do to grow a career that's more rewarding and successful than you ever thought possible. If you're ready to turn your craft into a career that you love, I am so excited you're here. Welcome to the Craft to Career podcast. You are in for a treat. I have a guest on the podcast today who you are absolutely going to love. His name is Kwejo, and I'll let him introduce what he does and who he is. But let me just say, this is an episode you do not want to miss. Pull out a notepad or write notes on your phone. You will want to remember. This is an episode you're going to want to come back and listen to again and again, because it is packed with so much information and value. I cannot wait to dive in. Before we dive in, just an ask. If you have not left a review for the podcast, take just a second to go do that. It can mean the world to another entrepreneur who can find this podcast. It can change their business, the trajectory of their business and success. So if you can pay that forward, I'm going to read a review from Janie Brady. She says, "I love listening to this podcast while in my sewing room. Elizabeth does an excellent job diversifying the topics and guests she provides for her listeners every week. Many of the people I follow on Instagram are people I have met, in quotation marks, virtually through this podcast. And I love that I can continue to learn from these people even long after their episode is over. Each episode is a gift that truly keeps on giving, whether you are just thinking about starting your creative career or you are a seasoned business owner. This podcast will provide you a wealth of knowledge and benefit you wherever you are on your creative journey." So thank you, Janie Brady. And I really do believe this week, this episode that we have from Kwejo is one of those episodes that you are going to love and revisit over and over. So let's jump in and let me introduce you to Kwejo. Kwejo, I am so excited that you're here on the Craft to Career podcast. For our listeners, can you introduce yourself and a little bit about what you do?
Sure. And thank you, Elizabeth. So my name is Kwejo, and I am an online course consultant and a Facebook ads manager. And all that means is I work with online course creators to help them, you know, fix their marketing, their sales, kind of flesh out their team so they can reduce their overwhelm and increase their impact and profit. And Facebook ads does play a part in that. And so I have like a small boutique Facebook ads agency that runs ads for the same audience.
Very cool. And I wanted to just clarify for my listeners, we had kind of talked about this before. You work with not e-commerce. So when someone's selling, for example, my audience, a quilt pattern or a book or something, that's not really your area of specialties. What you focus on are the courses, people who are selling a course or a membership. Is that correct?
Correct. E-commerce ads to an e-commerce store with multiple products are just an inherently different challenge from the kind of ads that I work with for course creators, which would be, usually they fall into three categories. One would be, look at me stumbling over my words. We're going to keep this up. So the first category would be running ads to a lead magnet to grow your email list. You know, the exchange of somebody's name and email for the value that you provide for free in a lead magnet. Because as the email list grows, so the business goes. That it rhymes. And then the second category would be, all right, so now that your email list is growing and you want to bring more members into your membership or sell more of your course, then you're usually looking at launching that course. Typically, though, there are other models. It could be like a webinar or a boot camp, you know, or a 5-7 day challenge. And you run ads to, or I run ads to for my clients, to get registrants for those launches. And then the third category, which represents the minority of my clients and is also the hardest to do would be a something called an SLO type of funnel ad. All this means is we are sending paid traffic to one product. And that's okay, because it's not like e-commerce where you have a website and a bunch of different products. But we're sending traffic to one product, usually a lower cost product, could be $27 to $37. But then that product has an order bump, which is just like the, I'm drawing on screen though you can't see me, the dot, 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 dotted line box around the little button that you click. It says, hey, would you also like to get this extra thing? And so, you know, the order bump might be another $10 item. And then maybe on the next page after you purchase either the main product or the order bump plus that product, there's an upsell into, you know, a limited time offer. You can get my full course for 20% off. So that's like a SLO funnel, stands for self-liquidating offer. And the concept there is that you start with a low ticket offer, you run ads there, and you're able to make a profit based off of the average cart order value that people are buying from those ads. So those are the kind of ads I do.
So I'm very curious, when someone has a business, a membership or a course, at what point is it worth them paying for ads? Because, and I ask this for a couple of reasons. One, you never know if you're going to get your money back, right? It's always there's things that can help with it. But if you're at the beginning phase and money is really tight, like when is this a good investment time?
I would say if you're at beginning phases and the money is tight, then that's probably not a great time to invest in ads. When do you invest in ads? Number one, when you know that your product is, it's proven that it has sold organically. And the good news is that there are a few ways that you can sell something organically, like one, to your email list, two, social media, right? Especially if you have a product that's visually attractive, then let's go ahead and start to advertise that in Instagram stories, advertise that in Facebook stories, be posting that on Pinterest, right? And then three, and not a lot of people talk about the third one, which is if you feel like your social media and your email list is small, then how about branch out and start collaborating with somebody who is, let's say, selling a product that serves your same niche, but the product is not competitive with yours. Then you can show up on video with them discussing various challenges that your ideal customer avatar, the person who you would like to buy your stuff, has. And you can grow your email list that way through collaborations. You can grow your Instagram account, your social media through collaborations. And so make sure your product is proven and you see some level of profit there before you start to push ad money and use that to drive your product sales. Because like you said, Elizabeth, it's not guaranteed that ads will work. And so the last thing that we want for you, the listener, is to take $1,000 and just throw it to Facebook on the altar of Mark Zuckerberg and see if it will just magically work. You need to prove an offer first. Does that help?
Yeah. And when I very first started running ads a couple of years ago,
okay. Yeah.
I actually started by trying to grow my email list. And
that's good.
And it was helpful that I already had an email list. So I think using, you know, the free platforms, like you said, find what's working, what's sticking, what's resonating. And then I took a post of mine that was doing really, really well. And I just added money to that. I knew that that image was resonating. I don't know why that over another one, but it just was. And that just went like wildfire. So do you have, is it a good idea to grow an email list with Facebook ads?
Absolutely. It's a good idea to grow an email list. And you just shared the perfect approach. So like, let me take what you said and just add a little more. Mm-hmm. You had a post that was doing well organically. And so you put ads behind that post. For the listener that isn't quite sure yet what content would attract the right sort of leads, like they can do what you did and look at well, what are the challenges that their ideal, you know, person they would like to do business with experiences? And they can practice online in organic Facebook and Instagram reels, speaking to those challenges. And then, yeah, just like you identified, oh, this post is popping. All right, I'm going to put ad money behind it. Great. So then go into Ads Manager, make sure that you choose an organic post that combines well with your lead magnet, and then start sending traffic to your lead magnet page. And ideally, though, disclaimer, the cost per lead and the prices per lead differ between different niches, but like ideally you could get leads opting in for your free lead magnet between $2 and $3 per lead.
Okay, because I was doing like 25 cents per lead, which I remember.
Whoa.
Yes, but also it was a few years ago. I feel like price, it's changed, right?
Slightly. Facebook is a marketplace. And so as there is more competition to show ads into somebody's limited Facebook feed, then the prices do go up. Now let's talk about 25 cent leads, shall we?
Yeah, let's.
So I typically tell clients $2 to $3 would be okay, right? If we get $1.75, now we're doing good. If we get leads that are under, let's say, 80 cents, that is an absolute home run. But I even challenged because I have a junior ad manager on my team, right? And so there was one client, her name is Franny, and she has a visual brand building business. That's not the right word. She has a brand studio. People go to her when they want rebranding and they just want their brand to pop, and you know, videos and graphics and copy. And so what had happened was we were getting leads for her at a reasonable cost per lead, in the high $1 ranges, you know, let's call it $1.75. And then I'm reviewing her account and her leads have dropped to like a dollar and sometimes 90 cents, you know? And so the first thing I did, which is what I want you, the listener, to do too, is if you see leads, if you happen to be getting leads that are 40 cents, you know, that sounds awesome. Go into your targeting, because I challenged my ads manager. I was like, these lead costs are great, but are we actually doing the right targeting? Because normally we don't see lead costs so low, and you want to get the highest quality lead for the lowest cost possible, not just the lowest lead, like the lowest cost per lead. Otherwise, we're going to send ads to Afghanistan and Southeast Asia, you know, and you're going to get plenty of super cheap leads. And so I would encourage you to look at your targeting. And the simplest way to do this is either by interests inside of Facebook, or if your email list is over 600 people, just take your email list and upload it to Facebook and build something called a lookalike audience. You can Google it, but basically Facebook will look at the people on your email list and then give you an audience of 1 million to 2 million people who are just like them that you can show ads to. And of course, make sure to choose the countries that represent folks that are buying your product anyway, and you'll be off to the races, so to speak.
Which I do want to touch on. I actually wish I remember how I found this course, but I took your beta course for running your own ads, which was awesome, by the way. But I want to share about that with my audience, because especially at first, there's not a budget to hire someone to do your ads for you. And I think there's something really great about learning how to run your own ads so you know what's going on, so that when you do hire someone, you still understand. So do you offer this course still? And can you explain a little bit about what you do in this course?
Yeah, I do offer it still. And thanks for mentioning it. It's great because, well, look at the name. It's called the Lead Gen Cheat Code. And while plenty of ads courses just talk about like, theoretically, here's what you should do, and here's like the concept, this is not that course. This is me taking my knowledge, or I took my knowledge, it's already in the course, as a Facebook ad manager, and just outlining step by step, here is the best way to set up your ads. here's what you do when your ads aren't working right. And by the way, there's like, you know, five different ways it could go south. Sorry, but this is ads. And here's what you do in each of those scenarios. So picture the same kind of internal training that I would give and like quality control for like my junior ad manager on my team. And I just took that and distilled that information in an easy to learn and absorb way for you, the listener. If you're interested in running your own lead generation ads, not sales ads, because that's completely different and a lot harder. But if you are interested in growing your email list and you want to be able to test like me and then lower your cost per lead in the same way that I would for clients, it's the lead gen cheat code. And I'm guessing you'll find a link for it somewhere in the description.
Yeah, in our show notes. So what is the difference? Why is it so different to do lead gen versus sales ads? Because in my mind, I don't know the difference. So enlighten me.
Well, I love lead gen ads because they're simple. And the biggest difference is the ask that you are asking somebody who clicks on your ad is a lot easier. It's a lot lower of an ask. Lead generation ad, here's my thing of value. It's free. All I need is your name and your email for it. That's a very easy ask versus here's this thing that also is valuable, but you have to pay money for it. Because let's take the perspective of the person who's clicking your ad, right? They might not know you. They probably don't know you because you want to be showing your ads to a cold audience if you have a very small, warm audience. If you have like 600,000 followers on Instagram and Facebook and an email list that's like 40,000 strong, great. Let's work at showing stuff to your warm audience. But normally we're starting from a place that's smaller than that. So if somebody does not know you, what are they more likely to do? Take your free lead magnet or purchase something right there on the spot? The former, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So right now I'm taking an Instagram, actually, I think it's a membership. I didn't even totally know what I was signing up for. It's way better than I thought it was, but it's a membership from Nicole of Gardenery Co. And her big thing is she doesn't sell anything ever. And I was like, what? No way. And I went back and looked at her Instagram. She's getting near to 1 million followers. And she doesn't. She only offers free things and then has an upsell. Have you seen that business model and what are your thoughts about that?
So my thoughts are, if you have a free thing and then on the thank you page, the confirmation page, you have an upsell, that can work. I just advise my clients and tell you, the listener, to not expect to sell so much from the related upsell that's on the thank you page that your ads are free, or even better, that Facebook is now paying you to run ads. That can happen, but generally what happens is, oh, I now am making back like 40% of my ad costs. You know, my leads were, oh, I should have picked 50%. That would have been easier math, but they were like $3 and now they're, you know, $1.25. Hopefully that's 40% of $3. But yeah, so that type of model works fine because what she's doing is offering, I'm assuming, lead magnets, things of value that she knows meets pain points that her audience has. And then yes, on that thank you page, there's an upsell. But what I bet is also happening is what, there's this lady, her name is called Shannon Mattson. It's not my term, but she calls it a secret, I believe it's like a secret purchase menu or a secret upsell menu. But basically, once you're on their email list, then you're put into a sequence to build that builds their trust or builds your trust in them, that shows their authority, that shares some case studies of people that they've helped. And then that goes right into a sales email sequence where you can buy maybe some more of their core product offers. I don't know if she's doing that. You could tell me, but that's a model that I've seen work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she mostly does like free webinars and the webinar is packed with value. And then she sells like a $2,000 course or something afterwards. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So I am curious, what are some big no-nos that you see with ads where you're like, oh, no, that's just not going to work?
Going with one piece of ad creative and one piece of ad copy, I am for testing. And so just choosing something and putting it there, that's, you don't want to do that. You can see a lot better results if you take some time, look into your audience, see what they need, what their frustrations are, how you can meet those, and craft three different pieces of ad copy. And then maybe start with five different, let's call it reels, because reels do perform now, though we make graphics for our clients too. Like, the videos are really hitting. So that's one big no-no that I would avoid. Start by testing different combinations of ad copy and ad creative, and that will serve you well. What's another no-no that I see? The ad targeting. Hearing that you can target like an open-ended audience, a wide open audience, sorry, that's a better term, and then letting Facebook do worldwide targeting or just targeting any age range, any country, I would not do that. Only because for everyone, and you can't really say always, but you can in this case, for everyone, when you decide to show your ads to any country, Facebook just likes to find you cheap leads, right? And so it will then start showing your ads to people who can opt in from countries that usually do so cheaply. But then those countries, like, not knocking any specific country, but what happens is let's give an example. Let's say people start opting in to your ad from, give me a country.
Thailand.
We'll just say Pakistan, because okay, I said that Pakistan. Before, right? Pakistani folks, great. When I lived in China, I used to live in China for 12 years. I had friends from Pakistan. Thing is, you might be selling a product that is $500. And what is the annual income of somebody from, let's say, a Middle Eastern country? You know, obviously, we're not talking about like Kuwait or United Arab Emirates, where the income could be a lot higher than ours. But, or like from Southeast Asia, the difference is you're selling something that might be like half a year income, you know, 3 months income. And so are they likely to buy? Probably not. And so one thing that you want to make sure you're doing is showing ads to the countries that have people who can buy your stuff. Normally we call those the big five countries, just because like they represent Western countries that have like the biggest purchasing power and like the habits to buy things online. So that could be the United Kingdom, could be Canada, could be the United States, Australia, and I think New Zealand is there. And some people like to show ads to Ireland. So pick your countries and ideally pick your age range, and then you can have like a wide open audience and let Facebook do the rest for you. I think we'll stop with those two. How does that sound?
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I would be curious to hear some case studies. You talked about, I think it was Fran, some of your clients, that what they offer, like what, why is it going well? What do they offer? And I'm thinking specifically, I mean, things that I know of. One, the niche, I mean, which goes hand in hand with knowing your demographics. You don't just want to throw it out to the entire world. Sometimes people are like, oh, I'm going to offer this and that and this. But I would love to hear from you. What do you see when someone reaches out to you and they're like, oh, we would love for you to run ads. What are things that you can see from a company that you're like, I would love to work with you because I really feel like this is going to go well?
Ah, that's a great question. So on my application form for ads, one thing that I love to see is somebody who was already in business for 3 to 4 years, because you know the struggle. When you first start out, you're figuring out your messaging. You're figuring out who exactly wants to buy my thing, and does the thing that I sell really help them? And you're getting the feedback, you know, you're tweaking your offer. And I think, what is the stat? Like around 80% of businesses don't make it past the first year. And so just by having several years of longevity, that means that their product is proven. And so that's something I like to see. You want to know a few case studies?
Yeah, I would love to.
So when I see a product that sells, ultimately it comes down to the offer is just dialed in. It's amazing. The value is clearly there. The value is probably 10 times greater than the cost of the offer. And what I see commonly is that that business owner has invested a lot of their time in understanding their client. And so when I say invest a lot of their time, they've either done the research or they've paid like a copywriter to do the research for their business. Either way, when you look at their ad copy, it's clear that they understand. And so we're going to reverse engineer this so like the listener can break this down for themselves and even do it themselves. But it's clear that they understand the one or two main problems that their ideal client experiences or has. And these aren't just any problems. These are the problems that their product can solve. Okay. And then following that, it's also very clear that they understand, let's say, the 3 to 5 frustrations that that ideal client has around those problems. So the problem, let's give a random example. The problem might be a disobedient dog, right? And the solution that the course owner sells is like DIY, train your dog in a week kind of course, okay? And so the frustrations around having a disobedient dog could be that it's chasing the grandma across the street, right? Whenever you go out, that it's always pulling against the leash and it's everything that you can do, you know, to keep it in line. You could feel, you could have external frustrations and internal frustrations. For example, the embarrassment that you feel when your dog is barking at the neighbor's kids, like uncontrollably, you know, that would be internal. And external could be the fact that your HOA called you up and said, hey, you can't have your dog in here anymore. Too many neighbors have complained, right? So these frustrations, these business owners really understand the frustrations. They really understand what their ideal client tries to do when they try to fix the problem on their own and the bad results that happen from that. And I'll stop there to keep it simple, but that's what I see with great selling products. And as far as case study goes, like I have one lady who's working with me now. She has a, so her niche is an intriguing one. She is a stenographer, which just means like if you've seen any court shows or like you follow any, I don't know, law and crime, whatever that niche genre niche is. But the people who have those weird keyboards and they can basically type really fast, so fast in fact that they can record conversation between 4 or 5 people, and just yeah, they're amazing stenographers. They use a tool called a stenograph, I believe. And back in the day, they also, and still to an extent, are responsible for live captioning. So let's say you're watching a sport event and those captions showing up on screen could actually be typed by a stenographer. Like, yes, like YouTube does automatic captioning, but stenographers can actually produce captions quicker and more accurate. And so it's that's what she does. And she has a paid webinar where we run ads to her against her niche. We target her niche, right? And she has like this paid webinar. It's like $37 and it sells great. But her niche is very clearly defined. And this lady also is quite accomplished. Like she has some worldwide like speed records going on and a lot of authority and cred. And so her brand really does well in showing people how they can take the next step in their career and get this and not be like weeded out or I guess have their businesses taken over or destroyed by AI. So her ads really work well. And I think as of last week, she had ads, well, we had ads running for her that were returning like 3 to 4x on ad spend. Like you give Facebook $1 and you make $4. Another example is a client of mine who has a local brand studio. And so if you're building somebody's brand or rebranding somebody and giving them new videos and new images and new copy, what's something that your clientele would need? Because she has like an online presence too. And that's something that she has found is very, very applicable. It, like it's very much needed. And what that is a visual brand guide. And so the thinking here is her business is proven. They make tons of revenue, right? But then she thought, what about the people who couldn't afford her services? What would they need? Ah, a guide that could show them the same process to revamp their own visual branding. Great. And it sells quite well. Again, not at like 4x revenue, but we're still getting between 2 and 3x return on ad spend. And so give Facebook a dollar and get back $3. I like that. Amazing. And the beauty of this sort of thing. Yeah. You're like, sure, sign me up, right?
So what does she charge for the brand guide?
$67, I believe. Don't quote me on that. It should be 67. Yeah. She has another product that's at $47. I believe this one is at $67.
Okay. So yeah, I could study case studies all day, but I'm very curious. A lot of people who I talk to and teach really fight against the niche to the point where they're like, no, I can see this company and they don't have a niche, or they just don't buy it. Have you seen someone have success who doesn't have a niche? Prove me wrong. Okay.
Well, yes, I've seen plenty of people who have success that don't have a specific niche. However, have I run ads for somebody who doesn't have a niche? No, all of my clients have a niche. Again, why? Because if you're speaking to everyone, then generally you are selling to no one. Why? Because everyone has their own different needs. And how are you going to have a product that serves everyone? Like, yes, there are some exceptions, but in general, even if you look at like the biggest brands, you know, Whole Foods, do they serve everyone? Not with those prices. You know, and then like, look at Walmart. Do they serve everyone? No, like their model is like a low cost product and their margins aren't very big. And so like they're not serving everyone. But let's bring it home to like the online course creator, or the online course creator who has a membership or a product that they sell. When you see examples, like, I don't know, I'm thinking of celebrities. Celebrities do well at selling a myriad of products or being an affiliate for a myriad of products, right? But like, okay, let's look at a Kardashian. Like, is even Kim selling everything? Like, she might have clothing. She might like back makeup or have her own. Don't quote me on her products, right? She might even, there's quite a few celebrities that have like various like alcoholic products now. But if you even look at that, she in general is selling things to her core audience of people. Let's look at like, I don't know, The Rock, who has a myriad of products, let's say. Even then, it's because he has celebrity cred that he can kind of put his name on a product and it would sell well to almost anyone. But for like an online course creator, pick a niche. This isn't like growing social media. This is business. This is sales. And the more clearly defined that you have like a niche, the more clear you are on the person who you serve, then you can go deep. And you would rather know them deeply and super well so that they find themselves inside of your messaging. So they're like, this person understands me. Not a bunch of people, just me and my issues, my unique struggles. And then, wow, their product. This is exactly the thing I need. To how do they know I had this problem? And how do they know it was exactly this thing and this thing and this thing? It's because you did research into their 5 or 6 frustrations that result from 1 or 2 problems. And so you narrow down, and then that's where the profit is. The profit isn't in serving, unless like you're, let's call it celebrity, you know, in your industry, and you serve a ton of different, like a broad range of people, like the profit could be there too, but that's really difficult. And you're going to have to build up that audience and it might take years to get to that level. But if you are ultra niche and you really understand the person who you want to buy your stuff, that's when you can charge a premium for it. because you have like a product that helps them the exact way they need to help be helped. And it's clear that you understand them and you have plenty of examples of people with the same kind of issue that they had that you've helped. And then all of a sudden they're like, this is exactly what I need. And because they have that problem, then you can charge more for it, the solution. Make sense?
Which, yeah, I'm curious. So I have in the past, I've hired a copywriter and I mean, clearly, you know, your stuff, right? So she did some market research for me. I guess that's normal. So you mentioned if you have a copywriter, they will do some research and get the wording for you. Can you share what that looks like? And if you have copywriters that you work with that you want to give a shout out to.
Okay. Well, shout out to Lisa, who is, I should say was, for full transparency, because I taught her how to do copywriting, which I learned from somewhere else. And then she became quite busy. So now I have more of my copywriting done in-house. But still, shout out to Lisa. She does still take projects and she's very good. But why is she good? Copywriting is part talent. You have to be decent with the written word. But truly what I believe and what she always did and what I loved about the process that got and gets still, because we still use the same process, good results for the clients, is research. Let's say she stalks people around the internet. Now people are like, stalks, that is a very bad word. Like the connotations there, right? But right. It's true. You're smiling. When you get that video podcast, people can see you smiling. Yeah. So what do I mean here? Stalks. Let's take an ICA, ideal customer avatar, the person who, like you as a course creator, want to do business, right? With. How do we find their pain points and the problems? Well, we stalk them. We go to Reddit and we search for the niche or the kind of product or the problem. It's not that hard to find people whining, and you can find lots of whiny pants on Reddit. I'll leave it there. And so once you find like an area of Reddit, then you can start to have an Excel spreadsheet. Let's say one column is complaints, right? And you just start copying and pasting their words that you found into the complaint column. Then you go to Google, and here's one that is very effective. Let's say you serve quilters. How about that? Good example. And you on Google type in the best books for quilters. Okay. And then Google will, in like the first row or whatever, display of search results, it'll give you a bunch of books. And take those names of the books, write them down somewhere or in your Excel spreadsheet, and then go to Amazon.com and type in the titles of the books. And then go to the review section. And in the review section, you will see people complaining. So go find those complaints about what needs. Usually it's, I bought this book and I thought it would be that, but they didn't even talk about gold, gold, gold. Put that into your spreadsheet, right? And then go to YouTube, for example, and start to ask questions surrounding the problem that you solve. Like, you know, it could be, how to do a backstitch without it falling apart. I don't know. I don't quilt.
Nice. But
I did so. Nice. Yeah. I did so in home ec class back in college, and I learned a backstitch. I could still do it. Not that it will nice. Work well. Anyway, and so look at not the description, but let's say you find your backstitch video, and then you go to the comments, and you're looking for videos that have a lot of lots of comments, so probably from bigger channels. But either way. And what are you looking for in the comments? You're looking for not just the pain points, but, you know, the hopes and dreams. Like, oh, yeah, I learned this and I can't wait to make something for my grandmother. Or I really needed to learn this because I've got a baby boy on the way and I'm making something for him. And what you're doing is you're stalking your folks around the internet and you're compiling this Excel spreadsheet or Google Sheets, because Excel's not too shareable. And you have the problems that they face, and then you narrow those problems down to one or two that your product best solves, right? And then you have their frustrations, and you have their words. it's okay to go find a bunch of people's words. Like, it's not plagiarism if you find a bunch of people's words and then you look for the common themes and then you start to use those words or issues in your problems. That's the best way to do it. And then, you know, their hopes and dreams and desires. Why are they trying to learn the thing that you're teaching or make the thing that you're teaching, you know? And here's the thing, a common fear that I've seen from like somebody as well, but if I put in my ad copy, learn the backstitch, you know, and make this quilt for your grandma, like what if they don't want to make something for their grandma? Shouldn't I make like a much more general scenario? No, you shouldn't. You should paint something that you've seen recurring in your research. Paint a picture with the words, like a slice of their life, like what it's like. How old is grandma? Why are they making this for grandma anyway? Oh, did grandma make them blankets when they were little? You know, like, are they trying to like give back to grandma? Grandma's in the nursing home, you know, like she just needs something warm that reminds her of the names of her grandkids because she's suffering from Alzheimer's. Like, get specific. Even if the thing that the scenario that you paint with your words isn't applicable to everyone, they can still get the emotions and the feelings from it. And maybe they want to make something for their son. They'll read your well-researched and well-written ad copy about grandma, and their brain will paint the scenario that they're hoping for with their like baby that's on the way. Follow?
Yes. And this is so great for people who are struggling to find a niche. Do exactly what you just said. And within what, even the examples that you just came up with, there were like five different niches. And so if people are like, well, how should I narrow? Do that and find the recurring things that you are excited about. Or which I do want to talk about having the authority and credibility. you talk about like they have the authority and credibility. Because sometimes, often actually, I see people come out and like, I offer this course. They don't know what they're doing. They've seen other people do it. And so they're going to run with it. I love how you said they've been in business for a couple of years and it's a proven thing. Have you seen people try and run ads or sell something when they just don't have the experience or the credibility? I don't mean to say this to scare people who are just starting out. I'm using this as encouragement, like, stick with it until you have the credibility, until you have the proof. But can you speak to that at all?
Yeah. Are you asking how, let me make sure I'm understanding. Are you asking how you get the credibility and proof, or just like the dangers of running ads before you have that credibility and proof?
Both. I was like, please don't make me clarify because I didn't give a question there, but.
Well, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
It's the credibility that helps me sell, right? But it's also the credibility, the experience of having gotten results for real people that helps me hone my messaging. You didn't ask this, but I will share it. Let's say you have a niche, right? I'm speaking to the listener, and you want your product to sell. So you go and find somebody who's selling more of your product. Makes sense. They have a bigger business, or at least they have lots of followers on social media and they talk about the product. And so you assume they are selling. But the thing is, you don't know the back end of their business. You don't know if they are profitable. And let's say they are profitable. You don't know the size of the team that they've had or how many years they've been in business. And so also there's something that usually happens with us business owners, which is the thing that we did to get us to a certain point of success is not necessarily the same thing that we're doing to maintain that success. Like the growth strategies are different from the maintaining success strategies. And growth strategies are highly specific to the time that you were growing in. Witness somebody who decided to grow their brand through SEO back in 2009, or somebody who was running Facebook ads back in 2013, right? Or, you know, somebody who's doing, focusing solely on organic Instagram, but they were doing it back in 2017 before everybody jumped in, you know, because of the pandemic, right? Those growth tactics can work to some extent now, but they worked better like at a certain time because the platforms are continually changing. You know, let's call it the economic situations in the world are changing. Start knocking on wood, everybody, that we're not going to go through some sort of other pandemic. Like, I don't really knock on wood. I'm a praying person myself, but still, like, everything's changing, right? And so the things that got people there are different from what they're doing to stay at that level of success. But then we, naturally starting a business, might want to look and try to copy. And so that doesn't work as well as we would hope. So what I would recommend then is starting, we're going to get to having the authority and credibility. But first, before you can get authority and credibility, you have to find people who you want to help. And so you didn't ask for this, but the short explanation here is don't just make something and like a course and then expect people to come running, even if your course is great. I've been there, I've done that. I've poured a summer of hours and hours and hours into creating a course and nobody bought it. Even on a very recent episode of my podcast, I shared like a couple of failures, one in my current business where I started a course without doing the research because I thought, oh, three things are selling well. Let me add this other thing. It makes sense. I talked to like four people, you know, and my wife. It makes sense. And nobody really bought it. So here's what you do. You pre-validate your course by coming up with an issue that it solves and an outline and selling that before you make it and seeing if people give you money. And if you're like, how could somebody give me money before I developed it? Well, very easy. You have a promise that if somebody takes your course, this is what's going to change for them, the outcome, and you have an outline. And people do this all the time. Like, right, Elizabeth, you bought, where's the next place you're applying to?
Well, I took your Facebook one. Like, I took your beta course, but next place we're going to Guatemala.
Okay. Do you already have the ticket for that?
Yeah.
Have you taken the trip yet?
Nope.
There we go. So you paid a good amount of money and you haven't done the thing yet. You haven't flown. I'm guessing you got your hotel in advance. They haven't given you the thing that you paid money for. But what they have given you is a clear expectation of what is going to happen when, you know, the travel date comes, right? Like, and so that's what us people in the online course niche or world can do. Clear expectation. This is what I'm good at. This is the outcome. This is your problem. And this is the solution to the problem. And here's a simple outline. Let's go. It's going to cost, you know, $277. And then you test that. And if you get enough people, then you start. And how do you know what's enough? Pick a number that represents enough for you to have a proven concept, you know, and be upfront. Say, this is not developed yet. I'm going to give you a bunch of extra perks, i.e. time with me, because I am an expert. We're going to go through the course. You know, you'll get live Q&A with me. I'll help you. And because you're a founding member, you know, you get the unique opportunity of kind of shaping the course to make sure that it helps more and more people down the line. And we're going to start once 20 people prepay. And if we don't make it there, full transparency, I will refund you your complete, you know, payment. And that actually will cost me money because I have to pay like the refund fee or whatever, you know, on the platform. So there we go. Pre-validate your course and then you'll get people who need your thing and you can help. And then since you help them at a lower price, 40% off, half off of what the course is going to sell for in the future, you can also ask them for testimonials. What was their favorite part? What success did they get? And then you build case studies from the good testimonials, which is testimonials kind of like, rah, 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 this course was amazing. I had this issue. I feel like I learned so much. Or Elizabeth is a great person. Testimonials are good, but what you want based off of the testimonials that you find are the case studies, which would be, hey, I came with this problem. I took the course. It was this thing in the course that helped me solve this problem. And now I don't have the problem anymore, kind of case studies. That's where the authority and cred comes from. You have your expertise, but now you got the credibility that you can put on your sales page and in your emails. And boom, now you're selling stuff. I feel like this is like a masterclass on how to get started. It is.
And then, I mean, I want to be respectful of your time. So I'll just ask one more question and then we'll let you go. You mentioned that the courses that do the best are the ones that offer like 10 times the value. You know, they're charging, let's say they're charging $100, but what you get from it is, you know, 10 times that. What are some examples of things that add value? You mentioned a couple just recently, like a live Q&A, but what are some things that people can add to a course or a membership that just really, you know, pack a punch? Is that how it goes with value?
Sure. So the things of value you can add to your course is actually not adding too much value. And here's what I mean. Some people feel like the more things that their course can solve that are adjacent to the core problem, the better. And so we got this Frankenstein of a course that's supposed to do everything, but then really it's just so complicated and so long that people don't finish, i.e. they don't get the result that you sold them, and then they're not raving about you because they didn't finish. Or the path through the course was complicated, or there's so many different paths. So if you want to add value, pick one problem that your course can solve. Notice that I said my course was only for lead generation ads. And I said it's not for like e-commerce. Well, I said I don't serve e-com people, that they can be helped, not by me. And it's not for running sales ads, only for lead generation ads. Therefore, I can guarantee the result because I'm only teaching one thing. And I'm not even teaching everything about lead gen. I'm teaching the most streamlined thing that can get the quickest results, which for me is doing research and testing, right? And so if you want to add value, narrow down the focus of your course so that it can deliver on one outcome very, very well and very easily, right? Because people, they want the solution quick. They don't necessarily want a ton of solutions, just the solution quick, right? And then now practically you're like, Quadro, what can I put in my course that can help have value? Okay, we'll have your lessons, have your video, have your very clear description. If you want, you could add a Facebook community for free. If you want, you could add, let's say, a weekly check-in where, you know, it's a live group call. But those don't necessarily matter as much if your research has been done, like we talked in the podcast episode so far, and if your course really solves a core problem.
Awesome. Yes, well said. And if our listeners want to find you, where is the best place for them to find you?
I think let's go ahead and say, if you want to listen to more of me, come listen to me on the podcast. It's called The Art of Online Business. And I, on that podcast, serve online course creators and online membership owners primarily with tips and tricks and strategies that can help them grow from a low six-figure business to like $900,000 in revenue a year. I just like that number because everybody says 1 million, you know? But we get strategies. I interview other people who are experts in their niche. And I also ask like behind the scenes questions about how their business is really going. And so if you want more Facebook tips from me, if you want to learn about people who are experiencing lots of success or growing and even understand like their failures inside of their online businesses, then it's The Art of Online Business, because it is an art with lots of strategy behind it.
It is. And it's a great podcast. I have to say, I'm a big fan. So thank you so much. This has been such a great chat with you. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Quadro.
You're welcome, Elizabeth.
Quadro, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. What an awesome episode with so much information and knowledge. I know I will be listening to this over and over again. This is like a tip of the iceberg. So definitely be sure to go and check out the podcast, The Art of Online Business, with Quadro as the host. He goes into so much more detail on topics. You know, if this is something that resonates with you, what we talked about today, you will learn so much from him and his podcast. So thank you for being here. And again, if you've not left a review for the podcast, take just a second to go and do that. And I will see you back here next Friday with a brand new episode. Take care.